Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a novel, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Beside me on the couch is Juliana, my girlfriend. She's not actually taking part in today's podcast at all because she is currently asleep or trying to sleep. But thanks a lot for all of the emails and messages with people saying that you enjoy the podcast that we do together, our joint review podcast with me and Juliana. She's actually just yesterday or today, she started the Lewis McMaster Bujold Vorkosigan saga. She's currently making her way through Shards of Honor and in an omnibus, the Barriar omnibus, or the Cordelia's Honor omnibus. So once she's caught up, we will we'll read the next book in that series together and continue it as a book club where we can discuss what we're liking about the series. So if you want to read along with that, you can. Also, thanks a lot for all of the great suggestions and great discussion that we're having on the SFBRP Goodreads.com listener group, or the Goodreads.com SFBRP listener group. So join up with that one and join in the discussion. We're talking quite a lot about what's going to happen on the SFBRP 200th episode. It seems to be one of the main things that people want seems to be is a top 5 list or top 10 list. Top 10 books of all time, science fiction books of all time, or my top or top 5 series of all time, or top 5 books that I've read for the first time since doing the SFBRP. So I'm sure I'll get on with those kind of things. And also I set up a new thread called Top Fives, or Top Five Everything. So the idea is that you can go there and share your top 5 of books or series or authors, or maybe your top 5 everything, or your top 5 alien species, or your top 5 female heroes in science fiction. There's lots of really great examples there, so join in and I'll discuss some of them as well on the 200th episode of the SFBRP. And there's still more discussion to be had there, I'm sure. I was also thinking of doing maybe a special episode about Ian Banks, or Ian M. Banks, if you will, and talking a bit about him and some of my favourite books of his, because he died last week, and it made me kind of tear up a bit when I was reading his final interview and he was talking about what it's like to only know that you've got a few months to live. It's quite heartbreaking. Maybe I'll do a full episode on him specifically, but now let's just get on to today's book that I'm going to I've just read, I listened to as an audiobook, and I'm going to review is called Pushing Ice. And Pushing Ice is by Alastair Reynolds. And like Ian M. Banks, I've read pretty much all of his science fiction. I think this is, I've actually reviewed most of it here, or a lot of it here on the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. Blue Remembered Earth, Century Rain, Chasm City, Diamond Dogs, Turquoise Days, House of Suns, Revelation Space, Terminal World, The Prefect, and I think except for the two follow-up novels to Revelation Space, which was Redemption Arc and Absolution Gap, I think this is the final science fiction novel of his that I've not reviewed. I think, maybe there's more than that. I know there's the is it Galactic North or something, a short story collection, which I've not reviewed for this as well. I might get around to that. So, Pushing Ice came out in 2005, and I must have read it around about 2006, which was a few years before I started this science fiction book review podcast. And I just, of course, read it as a book then this time round, as a as an audiobook, 19 hours and 39 minutes, and narrated by John Lee, who actually does, I think, all of the other Alastair Reynolds science fiction novels that I've listened to as an audiobook. So he's pretty good. What I want to say, yeah, the reason why I reread this one is because Juliana and I recently read Rendezvous with Rama. I can never actually say that properly. And someone said, hey, this is very much like Pushing Ice. And then I thought back and I was like, yes, it is very much like Pushing Ice. And I'm wondering why at the time when I first read Pushing Ice, I didn't notice the massive similarities between it and not just so much, I mean, it's got a bit in common with Rendezvous with Rama, which is the first Arthur C. Clarke novel in that series. But as you go on and keep reading that series through all of the other novels like Rama 2 and Gardens of Rama and Rama Revealed by Gentry Lee, apparently they wrote quite a bit of it together. I mean, they came up with the story ideas together, but Gentry Lee did most of the writing duty on the rest of that series. There are lots and lots of similarities between the story and the ideas that are explored, and some of the ideas that are explored in that series of novels and this single book. So straight away, I just say that I think actually Rendezvous with Rama is a much better book for what Rendezvous with Rama was actually concentrating on with that first novel in that series, because it wasn't written as a first novel of a series, it was just written as a novel, and then it continued as a series. But I would suggest read Rendezvous with Rama and then switch across and read Pushing Ice, or maybe give it a bit of a break and then read Pushing Ice. And if you want more of that kind of stuff that you get in Pushing Ice, then continue on with the Rendezvous with Rama series. Again, I don't want to go too much into it because it kind of there's some spoilers. Like I say, oh, it's like this. It's a bit like Rama in this way. It's a bit like Pushing Ice is a bit like Rama in this way, and Rama is a bit like Pushing Ice. It kind of spoils two books for the price of one. So just in broad strokes, the story, of course, with Rama is that you get a spaceship, a big alien spaceship, comes into the solar system and is going to swing around the sun and go off again. And there's only one ship which can get to it, and the commanders and all the people and the scientists on board can then explore Rama, and then they have to jump off the ship again before Rama accelerates around the sun and gets thrown out of the solar system. With Pushing Ice, you get a similar kind of thing, but this time it's not like a spaceship which comes in and then goes again. It's actually been around. It's been here all along. I think that was a tagline for the War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise, and it's like, they've been here all along. Hidden underneath the ground. Well, not underneath the ground, but underneath the ice around the moon of Janus, which is orbiting in a peculiar orbit around Saturn. Janus has like a twin moon, that there's these two moons both in the same orbit, and they influence each other, and sometimes one of them's ahead, and the other one's ahead, and they kind of catch up and chase each other around. They're both in the same orbital distance, I guess, from Saturn, which is very unique, apparently. They've never seen that. I actually opened up the Wikipedia page. It's actually true. He didn't make this up. Alistair Reynolds didn't make this up himself. There is actually... Janus occupies practically the same orbit as the moon Epimetheus. And this caused some confusion for astronomers, who assumed that was only one body in that orbit, and for a long time struggled to figure out what was going on. And it turns out what's going on is that one of the moons is a fake moon. It's just got some ice around it, and it's actually a spaceship. And it starts accelerating at high speed, or, high acceleration out of the solar system. And just like in Rendezvous with Rama, there's only one ship which can get enough speed to catch up with it and rendezvous with Janus. And then study it, and then before it gets too fast, they're going to turn around, or they're going to leave Janus and then accelerate back in the other direction. They've only got 3 days or 5 days or whatever it was, to actually spend exploring Janus and seeing what it is. And Janus is the size of a moon. It's like, I've actually got the Wikipedia page open here. It is, I can't actually see, mean radius. Yeah, like 90 kilometers across, roughly. Oh, well, so I guess it's 180 kilometers across, because that's radius, and we're talking whatever. But yeah, it's a lumpy thing, and it's accelerating out. So the spaceship which can catch up with it is called Rockhopper. And Rockhopper isn't doing the Space Guard. I think that's what the Space Guard thing is. Anyway, it's not just... It's a commercial spacecraft, and it's a... land on or rendezvous with comets out in the Oort cloud or wherever it is, and then they send them down into the center of the solar system. So anyway, as this Janus is accelerating out, the Rockhopper crew turn the ship and start chasing it. Now, yes, also in the same way that the Rama series continues, that's in Rama 2, some people get stranded on the new Rama that comes around, and they go off and visit another much bigger alien structure and meet aliens when they're there, and there's all these other kind of stuff, and then they come back and they go forward, and there's all these like things, and like, oh, what's going on here, and we're going to do this, and things get bigger and bigger. It's the same kind of thing with Pushing Ice. I don't want to give too much away, but it turns out that they do follow Janus all the way to its destination, which is a big structure that it's heading towards in this binary system called Spica. Spica, in the constellation of Virgo. And the idea being, again, I'm not giving too much away there, spoiler-wise, because you know that's where they're heading towards. It's given away in the early passage of the book. There's like three sections of the book, and I haven't really given away anything that doesn't happen in that first section, so I don't really mind too much about the spoilers here. So yeah, lots of similarities in the story, quite a few similarities in the content. not so many similarities in the tone of the novel. And I think this is what makes this book really interesting. The one example that you can use at this is like when somebody copies something else, like when one movie is based on another movie, the stuff that really kind of shows what the author or the director or the scriptwriter thinks is important isn't the stuff that's left the same, because you're like, okay, this is a retelling, so of course many things are going to be the same, but it's also like it's like what they change, like why did they change stuff, and that'll tell you more about the society of the time or the culture at the time or anything about, you know, what's going on, the different thought processes, the different politics and different views on, you know, humanity and all that kind of stuff, which is what is change. It's the changes that make a big difference. I, you know, I could talk about movies like Total Recall, but, you know, bring it back to the Bible. There's the book of Mark, and Mark is like written from one theological point of view, and it's got lots of similarities with Matthew and Luke and John, who all kind of base their story on Mark's original telling of the story. There's quite a lot of wording the same, but it's when they change the characters or change the quotes, and we have the different versions of these same stories, and it's what changes about them which you can say, ah, well, Luke's theology was a bit more in this direction, and John's theology was more in this direction, and Matthew was written like later than Mark, and we can tell that maybe the history of the church was going in this direction. So you can actually find out what about these people think and about their views by what, like, if they just include new material, it's like, well, why do they include that? You never really know. But when you see what's been changed, that's what you can really find out. So what I found interesting reading these two books so closely together was seeing in the different views, like what's changed about that. And one of the most important things that me and Juliana both liked about Rama was that everybody in the book is really good at their jobs. You know, there's the commander goes in and he's in charge and he does well, and then the scientists are doing that and they're doing something great too, and everyone is professional and awesome, and they say, these are the rules, and at no point does anyone break the rules. And at one point someone comes up and says, hey, I want to break this rule to be able to do this, and he doesn't just break the rule and go off and do it by himself. He goes and asks the commander, can I break this rule? And he's like, okay, let's do it. And they work it out, and everyone's working together, and then there's a scientist back home that are helping them out, and this other company back home that's helping out, and the politicians back home, and everyone's trying to help them out, and everything's really well done. And it's in a book which succeeds despite not having massive amounts of human drama and without people doing stupid shit. And Pushing Ice, because I think one of the main reasons is because it's telling, like, the story is a formula, like it's First Contact, it's Big Dumb Object, it's about mystery and about what's going on here, and these, you know, there's this history and there's other things that are going on that we've read many times before in other books. He's like, well, I'm gonna, like, Alistair Reynolds is obviously like, well, I'm going to see what this same story will be like. What would Rendezvous with Rama have been like if the people in charge weren't very good, like if they couldn't keep control of the people under them? What if the technicians were, you know, some of them were good, but some of them were a bit bad at their job? What if instead of everyone being healthy, what if somebody was really ill? What if the doctor, like, was doing this and rather than that, you know? And what if the people back home weren't looking out for them for the best? Maybe they weren't scientists trying to get the best out of them. Maybe there was a, because, you know, their commercial interest back home was manipulating them in some way and sending them bad data and bad intelligence to be able to make sure they do stuff that they didn't actually want to do. Yeah, and again, I don't want to spoil too much about it, but one of the main conflicts is between Bella, who is the captain, Bella Lind, and Svetlana, who is one of the main technicians. She's like the head engineer, head technician on the ship. And they're good friends, and you can see that they're good friends at the beginning. They're getting on okay, and blah, 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 and this and that. And you get a little bit of history of the two of them. And then something happens, there's a disagreement, and Bella keeps to the company line, and Svetlana thinks the best thing to do is look at this evidence, and not quite sure if they're going to do it, and the future of the mission and the future of their lives is depending on it, and one of them makes one call and one of them does the other one, and Bella sends Svetlana away, pretty much, like, not so much to prison, but being kept in the sick bay. It's like, yeah, you've got to go there. And then it switches around, and I don't want to give it away too much, but suddenly Svetlana is in charge. And that goes on for a while, and then throughout the book, there's this passing backwards and forwards between who is really in charge of the mission, who is in charge of, you know, of what's going on. And there's big skips forward in time as well. So it's not just about who's in charge this week or that day or that hour, but also who's in charge for this, almost like this generation or this 10 years or this 40 years or whatever, because like the narrative, the story, the plot lasts a long time into their future. And I think this is a really interesting choice by Alistair Reynolds, because it does bring up quite a unique storytelling device, like to go, okay, and backwards and forwards between these two characters of who's going to be in charge and the interest in something happens. You're like, oh, is it going to switch back in? Yes. And oh, is it going to switch back in? Oh, no. Oh, is it going to switch back in? Yeah, you know, and it's got this, it brings in this different tension, which isn't there because, like I say, the whole like mystery of what's going on with the spaceship and where they're going and the technology and where the aliens are and all that kind of stuff, does kind of take I wouldn't say a secondary role, but in Rama, that was the most important thing. There was a little bit with the commander and his wives, and there was a little bit with this character and that character, but generally, and at the end, there was a little bit of politics that came in, but throughout this, it's like all politics, all interpersonal conflicts, mostly between these two characters, but also between other secondary characters, and while I think it's handled in a way, it's kind of like that. I don't think it's handled very well. I think a lot of the time this conflict feels a bit forced, and yet at the same time Alistair Reynolds in his writing of it is kind of acknowledging that it's forced. It's like, yes, they are being pig-headed, yes, they are being petty, this feud between them is disrupting how well they can do their jobs, and it's screwing up everything else. But like I say, the important thing to show that between this and Rama is the drama. Rama didn't have the drama, and Pushing Ice does. And so I don't want to give it a pass because I do think it is petty. But then again, the characters in the novel, like, they meet up and they say, "Well, why are you still doing this?" Like, there's a character called Parry. And he's always there, and he's just like, "Come on, just get on with it. Why are you doing this? Why just kiss and make up, we can put it behind us." And another character's coming and just talk to each other, why are you doing this? But yet somehow it stays there. So while I don't think these characters are well written, it is something, at least Alistair Reynolds is trying to do something a little bit more interesting, and I think it's very clear that he's doing this on purpose, because by the time you get to the end, when you get this final switcheroo thing and this other stuff that happens at the end, and one of the characters, one of the characters dies, but what happens after they die, when the two character lines kind of come together, you're like, ah, now I see it. So it brings on this, I wouldn't say descends or ascends, I'm not sure which way around it, but it turns into like this almost like mythic cycle of night and day, you know, like the god of winter and the god of summer, the god of night and the god of day, going backwards and forwards all the time. You know, sort of like as lapping each other, and one taking control, and then there's a sacrifice, and the other one takes control, and there's a sacrifice. You know, so there's like kind of mythic themes going on about the playoff of these two things. And if you actually read these, these Greek myths and these Roman retellers of the myths, the gods come across as really like quite petty. And because there's so much power that these two women have over the technology and have over the lives of other people, it kind of feels a bit like that. Like I say, I don't think it's that well written, but I can kind of see what Alistair Reynolds is going for there. Yeah, and the payoff at the end makes it pretty clear, like I say. So the pacing of the book, still talking about the story, first third of this book is really, really good. There's loads of engaging scenes, there's lots of scheming, there's lots of danger, there's people dying, there's other people almost dying and being frozen, and then they catch up and land, or, you know, reach Janus. And there's a lot of stuff, and I've read this book before, and this time I was listening to it, and I was thinking, wow, this is going longer than I thought. I thought this was, you know, I thought they kind of got to Janus pretty quickly. So just imagine Rama, where they go, okay, rendezvous with Rama, and they're like, let's go. And then it takes a third of the book to get to Rama. So this time, after just reading Rama, I was like really, I was really going, just get on with it, get there. And there was a, and I remember, okay, this character, yeah, he's going to be important later on. But I think, I don't know what I was thinking the first time I read this, maybe because, again, Rama wasn't so clear in my brain. And but yeah, it seemed to, it didn't drag at the beginning, but there's a lot happens before they ever get there. But it does set up everything for the first time. And then the middle, I wouldn't say middle third, but about a quarter of the book in the middle, it's just a lot of waiting around, and we skip forward. Like everything previously has happened, you know, it's sort of like, and then this hour that happened, and then that day that happened, and then this hour that happened, you know, everything's been quite compressed into a very short time. Suddenly it's like, and then 3 years later, and then another 2 years later, and then 10 years later, and then 20, and it just skips forward a lot. And in those years of waiting around, of course, they've got to get from like one interesting bit, which is like, yes, we've arrived, okay, and all the difficulty that we had getting here, and all of the problems that we had getting here, which is all really interesting. And then once they're there, they kind of got to waste time a bit until they actually get to this big alien structure in the Spiker system and try and meet the Spikens and do all this kind of stuff. And when the aliens turn up for the first time, and then we start skip forward, it's like, okay, now we skip forward and there's more waiting around, and then we skip forward again and there's more waiting around, but then it really kind of accelerates. And the last third of the book, roughly the last third of the book, is interesting. But there's like about a quarter of the book in the middle, like the middle section. I wouldn't say the middle third because it's not quite a third of the book, but there's this middle third, which all the interesting stuff that you actually want, which is like the real conflict and the aliens and the interesting situations, kind of faded away a bit. And I kind of felt like I was waiting around. And it was okay. I mean, it didn't drag so much, but like the writing was good enough, but it just felt like Reynolds wasn't trying very hard. But then again, I remember like that middle section of the Rama series, I think Gardens of Rama or something, it's just like, and now we've gone all the way here, and now we're gonna go all the way back, and now we're gonna turn around and go all the way there again. I was just thinking, oh, fuck's sake, I know everything has to happen in threes with the Ramans, but like, come on, just get on with it. We didn't really have to spend all that time with those people in the middle, did we? Well, I guess we did. So yeah, anyway, it picks up at the end, and there's some artifacts they discovered, and other aliens turn up, and there's lots of trouble, and then at the end it's like, well, who's gonna win? Like I say, this big kind of like mythic struggle between these two really petty, annoying gods. It's like, well, okay. And then we get the little coda at the end. Oh yeah, actually, what the interesting thing is, I forgot to set this up with these two main characters, Bella and Svetlana. There's a scene right at the very beginning which is set thousands of years later, and it's about this human civilization which is spread throughout a big chunk of the galaxy, and it's like, well, it's been 10,000 years since the founding of our civilization. We need a memorial. And one of the characters is like, well, we should set up a memorial. We'll send out word and see if we can find our hero, our founder, but one of our main characters in the beginning of our civilization. She was our hero. She sent us back the information about the Spikens, or this information, and it was on that technology that our new society, our newer civilization that spread throughout this galaxy is based. And it says, let's do it. But then as you're reading, you think, well, which was it? Was it Svetlana or was it Bella? And then at the end, you discover which one it was and what happened and, you know, the whole thing that's been set up there. And it's a nice little touch. I didn't really think it was needed. I wouldn't have missed it if it wasn't there, but it was a nice little sort of like prologue, epilogue with these things, you know, these characters years later talking about what their memorial to the people who left on the rock hopper would be. What else do I have here? So there's this thing that Alistair Reynolds always puts into his books, which is the idea that there is no such thing as faster than light drive. There's no breaking the ultimate speed limit in the universe, which is the speed of light. which he kind of plays with around. He plays around with really well, I think, in many of these in these novels. I think House of Suns has got one of the more interesting explorations of that, even though it's only a small part of that novel. And there's a few others which do it well. Because there's always this kind of hard and fast rule, like, well, how does the Revelation space world work? You know, and it's so much about, well, this planet was left behind, and this planet is forging ahead, and this planet over here, the Chasm City, is doing this, and that's doing that. So yeah, there's lots of playing around with those ideas and how trading works between it. And it's when he breaks his rules where I think. Or the rules aren't quite so set. For example, his Century Rain novel, which I found really disappointing. One of his, for me, definitely his worst novel. Looking back at it, it's probably better than I thought it was at the time, but it was such a disappointment to read that. But there, it felt like he was just playing fast and loose with some of the rules that are so strong. And here, he's, again, I'm not quite sure if it's a strength that he's actually going, there's no faster than light technology, or is there? You know, there's the stuff that comes past here. And I was thinking, is this a plot hole? Is this just shoddy writing at the end? Or is he doing something more interesting that even the characters within the novel aren't really, why aren't they acknowledging it? And there's this big thing, well, why are the aliens doing this? Or why are the aliens doing that? And they say, well, this is the explanation. I was thinking, is that really? Well, if so, why don't they do this? Or why don't they grab that? Or why they do this? And why is there only this one spaceship that's been invited along? Why isn't it like Rama, where they send back and get a whole representative sample of humanity for their experiment? You know, all these different kind of things. And there's another plot hole with this thing, and there's this thing, and I don't want to give it too much away, but there's only one person who triggers this thing. And I'm like, why is there only one person triggering the thing? Why can't they do everything? Why can't anybody trigger the thing? Wouldn't it make more sense to everyone to trigger the thing? That would have been a lot more handy for anyway. Again, don't want to give too much away, but it felt like the technology. There was a lot of interesting technology in this book. I really liked the design of the rock hopper, the spaceship, and all of the, because it's about, you know, one of the main characters is a technician, and there's another character who's a doctor, and there's loads of really good kind of like well thought out hard science fiction stuff going on in this book, in the same way that you get like with Arthur C. Clarke, where he's like, okay, I've got to design this. How would this work? We need this. What's it going to take for that? And a lot of that is worked out. But like I say, some of these like overarching, like about like, okay, what is the speed of light and how is it being played with? It kind of niggled at me a little bit that some of this felt like a plot hole, even when I'm thinking, well, Alistair Reynolds, he was an astrophysicist, or he was an astronomer, astronomer, something like that. I can't remember exactly his full background, but I wanted it to be. I felt like it wasn't quite rigorous enough in that regard. What else have I here? I've actually realised I don't have any more notes. I put themes, opposite of Rama, but I've kind of talked a bit about that already, that this is about the messy side of politics, the messy side of human interaction, and what like a life or death situation will do about it. What else have I got here? No, that's it. Let me look on my iPhone to see if I made any notes about pushing ice on my iPhone. I should have probably done this before. Let me have a look here. Notes. Quantum Thief. Top 5 list. Potatoes. Barrier. No, I don't actually have any notes there as well. So the writing is, like I say, it's pretty good. I think some of the characters aren't written so well, but most of it comes out okay. What else have we got here? I'm looking around. Yeah, on Audible. So it's John Lee who narrated it. He's very good. I really like his narration. He's got very good British accent, even though it was never really clear where quite a lot of these characters were. I like the way that he brings out different characters. So he'll always have a Welsh character. He'll always have like a Brummy character from Birmingham, and he'll have these other characters from different regions around the UK. Like he has all these UK regional accents that he brings out, just so it's easier when characters are talking to each other. None of them say, oh, this person was from Birmingham, this person was from Liverpool, this person was from Scotland, this person was from the West Country. It's never actually stated in the book, but he brings out these interesting interesting vocal characteristics, so he doesn't have to put on silly voices, or he doesn't have to put on no effects are needed. It's just like he does all his own vocal effects. So John Lee, very good narrator. And like I say, I think he's done all of Alistair Reynolds' books so far, plus some others, I'm sure. I guess I could just click on his name here. Let me have a look. On Audible. John Lee narrates. Oh yeah, loads of stuff. Dracula, Pillars of Earth, a portrait of the artist as a young man. You know, yeah. So he's done lots and lots of these books as well. But yeah, it seems like quite a lot of Alistair Reynolds. He did White Fang by Jack London, one of my favourite books when I was younger. Yeah, lots of really good stuff. So, yeah, I don't really think there's much else to say about this, except that it isn't, I don't think it's a very well-balanced book. And I was trying to, like, as I was reading it, I was thinking, like, at the first part, I was like, oh, yeah, classic. This is classic Alistair Reynolds. But when there's this first thing that happens, like this first switch between the two leaders, I was thinking, oh, really? Well, that came about a bit abruptly. And I was thinking, oh, this is definitely, like, 4.5 stars. If I come back here to my rating, so for example, I gave the I gave Terminal World 4.5 stars and Revelation Space and House of Suns 4.5. I think those are some of his best novels. You know, Blue Remembered Earth, okay, Prefect, better than that. You know, Century Rain is down there. Chasm City, 4-star. You know, so I was thinking, well, yeah, four and a half star. Yeah, this is really great. And then there's this big lull in the middle, and I thought these badly written characters, or this like not convincing enough characters. It sort of like it felt forced. Like I say, it wasn't mythic enough to feel mythic, because it felt a bit like. But then the ground that was treading wasn't so good. So I was thinking, ah, well, you know, 3.5 stars. And then when I actually got to the end, I was thinking, yeah, 3.5, but it's a high 3.5. But now I think I've thought about it a bit more. And when I got to the end, I was like, well, this feels a bit plot holey. And if it isn't plot holes, I wish, you know, sometimes I like some mystery. But if there's a mystery in a book, I like the characters to acknowledge that that is a mystery, because then it feels mysterious to me. It's like, well, he's left this as a mystery, not because he forgot to wrap up that storyline, or not because, you know, he didn't realize that some science was wrong there at all. I want something to be a mystery because it's meant to be mysterious, not because it's badly written. And by the time I got to the end, I was like thinking back on this, I was thinking, actually, this isn't very good. So I'm going to give this 3 stars, even though I was thinking, yeah, 3.5, maybe 4, now that I've actually thought about it a bit more. And I have to remember that middle section of this book where I wasn't that impressed. Some of the status updates, which was like at 25%, I was like, I read this when it came out. It's really good. And then at 35%, I was like, I don't remember this taking so long. And then 60% of the way through, I was saying, this is skipping forward in time differently than I remember it. In my head, it was pretty even, but there are huge chunks I don't remember being so long, and other bits that fly by. This might be due to listening as audio. It might be due to listening as an audiobook and stuff like that. And there were some comments from other people who were reading along, or not reading along, but keeping up with my state, updates here as well. Gara said, it's not a bad book, but it suffers from Alistair Reynolds' female characterization. The rivalry between the two main characters felt pretty forced. And then Tamahomi says, I think the brain doesn't like to remember painful things like boring parts of the book. And this happened to me so many times. It's like, it wasn't so much boring, it was just a low point or a low stretch. And I want, like, my brain just goes, oh, well, when you read this book, you'll just remember the interesting scenes and you'll remember the interesting parts, and this stuff happened, and there was this ship, and there was a gristle ship, and all this other stuff. And, yeah, my brain kind of forced that out of my memory. But now, when it's all fresh, I can't give it a... such a high rating. So I'm gonna give it 3 stars, which is lower than I thought when I was going into it. But in total, goodreads.com gives it 3.95 stars, so it has quite a high rating overall. And let me have a look here as well. Friend reviews: 63 friends have reviewed it or said they want to read it, and it's got a 4.12 average here. So if you're a science fiction book review podcast listener, you'll probably like this book. You might even rate it. So Odo gave it 5 stars, Zivin rated it 4 stars, Ed 3 stars. I'm sure some people rated it lower, but yeah, Passos rated it 2 stars, Dan 3 stars. So yeah, generally 3, 4, 5 stars for this book. For other listeners of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. Anyway, I think that brings it to an end. I'm going to wrap up the review there. There's no reason to go much longer. The next book that I'm going to, or the book that I'm reading now that I'm going to review next, is probably going to be The Quantum Thief by, to be honest, I've forgotten the name. It's not a clearly English name. So let me go back to my library. So The Quantum Thief was written by Hanu Rajanimi, think he's a Finnish, and this has been highly recommended by a number of people, actually. So I decided to finally get to it. Unfortunately, one of the worst audiobook recordings that I've ever heard in the opening section. It seemed to get better once I'm out of the first chapter, or, you know, once I've got a bit more used to it. But really, really difficult to start listening to this audiobook. But I'll be reviewing that in the future. Otherwise, yeah, I've got loads of other books lined up, which I'll, of course, get to soon. So that's about it from me. You can email me luke@juggler.net, and you can also follow along with what I get up to when I'm not reviewing science fiction books and fantasy books. You can check out my blog, which is at lukebowage.com/blog. You can also check out my own original science fiction novels that I've published there. If you go to lukebowage.com, you can find a link. And also, I'm editing because I've written about a third to a half of an epic science, not an epic science fiction, like an epic fantasy novel. And I realized what I'm going to do. I realized that I was never actually going to finish it off if I don't get more, well, not so much more feedback, but I wanted some kind of validation that it's worth continuing. I really enjoy writing it. And when I read back over it, I thought it was really interesting and some really great stuff. And from my first readers that I sent it out to, they really enjoyed it. So what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to publish that in sections on Kindle, charge a few dollars for each section. And then once it's finished, put it together into a single novel. And I might put out my other science fiction on the Kindle store as well, because at the moment you've got to go to my website and download the EPUB books and things, and it's a little bit of a faff around. So I was thinking if I just put them on Kindle, it might be a bit easier for readers to check it out. If I could just go, oh yeah, just go to the Kindle, just search for me on Amazon, you'll be able to find my books, rather than saying, yeah, well, go to my website and go to this page and then click on this link and download this and then drag it across here and then import it into this thing, open up iTunes and then do the all that kind of stuff. Just saying, just find it on Kindle might be a lot more worth it. So if you're interested in reading my science fiction, just wait a bit for that. I'll hopefully be able to do that in the next few months. Yep. Twitter, I'm @LukeBowage. I think that's everything. Email me, luke@juggler.net. And Juliana just pointed to my screen. Yeah, Audible. Audible's really good company. And I am a subscriber there, but also I have an offer for you. So if you want to listen to any audiobook, you can for free. If you sign up for a free trial, go to don't go there. Go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and you can also listen to The Quantum Thief. No, actually, don't listen to that one. You can also listen to Pushing Ice for free if you want to, by going to that link, audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and and sign up for a free trial. You'll have a month to listen to this book, and if you want to continue, you pay a certain amount per month. I can't remember all of the details, and you get one credit a month. I have 2 credits a month, but that's mainly because a lot of my science fiction reading is now done by audiobook. Even though, like I say, probably about half of the books that I listen to as audio are books that I've previously read as paper books. But you can also reread books very easily by Audible, but on audio via Audible. So thanks a lot for Audible for helping out this, and hopefully you check out that offer. So anyway, on that note, that's it from me. Thanks a lot, and I'll catch you next time.